Today is the Feast of All Saints. You may not know that. I mean, we know it mostly as the day of Halloween. And Halloween used to be called All Hallows Evening. Huh? The day before the Feast of All Saints, although you couldn't tell by all these kids running up and down the streets with little bags of candy. The Feast of All Saints. We've been taught that the birthday of the church was the Feast of Pentecost, when the enlivening power of God was let loose on the earth in the wake of Jesus' resurrection. But I rather think that today is the birthday of the church. Why? What does the Spirit of God do? The Spirit of God enlivens us, enabling us to love. As simple as that. And so the Feast of All Saints is the validation of Pentecost. That's why I think it's even, in a sense, more important than Pentecost. Because here are, as William James would put it, the cash value of the sending of the Spirit. That people are enabled to love. And that's what we're celebrating today. The presence of love in what seems to me a largely loveless world. All you have to do is look around a little bit. Doesn't take any great insight or profundity of thought to see exactly how loveless our world is. As I was suggesting last week, we're not aware of that. We don't think about that. We're so acclimated to every person for himself or herself in this world. There's a notion of a totally selfless love, a love that does not, as we have in that wonderful metaphor, have charity as a hook, as a means of getting what we want. And that's what love is, real love. It's totally eccentric. Namely, the center of love is not me, what I can garner for myself, but the other, and what is good for the other. In other words, today is the feast of the real action of the Spirit of God, where we see in the lives of these people, okay, famous people, Francis of Assisi, Benedict of Labre, Thérèse of Lisieux, all these people, the enlivening power of God which enables us to move beyond our own pervasive egocentricity, our own self-concern. This is extraordinarily important. Who is a follower of God? Mohandas Gandhi, Malcolm X, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, all these heroic figures for whom the well-being of the other was more significant and more important and more dynamic in the sense of moving them than the regular self-interest, which certainly guides my life. In other words, it gives us a handle on where we are to find holiness. The guy upon whose work I wrote my dissertation, German, well, he was Italian, but then his family moved to Germany when he was quite young. And he chose to stay there, Romano Guardini. And as all adolescents did who were thoughtful, he had a real crisis as to what his life was to be about. And one day he was talking to his best friend. He said, "What I must do is go where the greatest love is. Where the greatest love is." This is the same Romano Guardini who started his academic career with a very distinguished. Karl Rahner said, when the history of the 20th century was to be written, Romano Guardini will stand as the greatest of the theologians. Rahner succeeded Guardini in his theological chair at the University of Munich. And that was the lodestar of his life, which also included the statement near the end of the life, the church is the cross upon which Christ is crucified. Quite remarkable for a man who was made Monsignor, confessor to Pius XII, blah, 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 covered with all kinds of honors. But that was the motive of his existence, huh? Where is the greater love? Where is the greater love? Just as in the great judgment scene in Matthew, I was hungry, I was in prison, I was a stranger, blah, blah, blah. There's no kind of orthodoxy to us. There's an orthopraxy test. How do we run our lives? And that's the absolute test of where we are as human beings. How much love is there in our existence? Unhappily, I've been saying the last couple of weeks and beyond that, the church is not the place. We look first to love, I'm afraid, to judgment, to condemnation, to a quite awesome uneven-handedness in regard to the people of the world. So we get Holocaust dismissing bishops, the Anglicans who are homophobes, and misogynists. And welcome, welcome. Only you, not those other people. Not those other people. Who will admit that women have souls. That was a major problem in the 13th century. Do women have souls? Again, the clear-sightedness of Jesus is what we rely on. Not all these kind of tests where we measure up by being obedient to the right rules. No. It's very simple. It's very simple. How large is our love? How many do we embrace? Whom do we exclude? That's the only question. And of course, that's what's embedded in this Matthean virtue of version, rather, of the Beatitudes. If you get a chance, look at the fifth chapter of the Gospel of Luke, which has a series of Beatitudes quite different than Matthew, the one we read today. Luke has Jesus saying, blessed are the poor, full stop. Blessed are the hungry and thirsty, full stop. Matthew sort of softened, mollified these harsh words of Jesus. And Luke also continues only with four Beatitudes and then four condemnations. Woe to you who are rich! With four woes, they're balanced in this nice Semitic fashion. Finally, just a conclusive thought comes from, strangely enough, the title of a book by a German theologian whom the present Pope likes a lot. He's Swiss, Hans-Urs von Balthasar, a guy who was very strange, who lived with this lady, we presume platonically, for all of his life and produced an enormous volume of writing. But he has one book which says it all in its title. Only love is believable. Nur Liebe ist glaubhaft. Only that. Only that. Only love only love. And that's why I think this is the birthday of the church. Spirit is, oh, the Spirit came. The Spirit came. What did the Spirit do in the book of Luke, in the Acts of the Apostles? The Spirit enabled people to listen to each other, to hear each other. Remember that? Everybody from all these foreign places understood what these little hillbilly Jews from northern Palestine were saying. Their hearts were touched. They listened, and they enabled people to hear each other. I would strongly suggest to you that given today, and given all the years of the human race on this earth, that's where love happens. Where we listen. Where we take the other seriously. Only that. Only that. If we are not anchored in that belief, any other religious anchorage is useless and a waste of time and a diversion and a dissipation and a falsification of what this man Jesus was about. And again, Augustine, in one of his better moments, put it very simply. Love and do what you want. Love and do what you want. Ama et fac quod vis. Love and do what you want. We who are so anxious to identify, to classify, to categorize the good ones and the bad ones. There's only one criterion. There's only one. How generous are you? How courageous are you? How honest are you with the other? That's love in action. And anything short of that, of course, has nothing to do with Jesus or the gospel.